We good? I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the South San Francisco County Sanitation District. This is Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. Would you all please rise with us for the flag salute tonight?
Put your hand to your heart and follow me.
A pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we do a roll call, please?
Director Hill?
Here.
Director Austin?
Here.
Chair Scholes?
Here. Thank you. Moving on to our agenda review, do any members of the board want to change the order of the agenda?
No.
Not? Well, take a motion to proceed with the agenda as presented by staff.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion as a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's. We're going to move to public comment. This is an opportunity for any member of the community to comment for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any items within the jurisdiction of this board. Please bear in mind that we cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. So this is your opportunity to address the board on anything that are not on the agenda. Please come forward.
Sure, why not? Julie Tacker, and my public comment for items not on the agenda appears to be becoming a theme. The fact that what's not on the agenda is what's bothering me, what's alarming. The things that have been outstanding that are not being brought to your board. One of them was, it's been a couple of months ago now, Ms. Price asked you how to get correspondence into the packet after some controversy over a December packet. We haven't seen any correspondence in your packets since. The two letters from the Water Board are quite interesting and should be part of a packet, part of an agenda, so that your board can have a healthy discussion about them. Two letters in a week is rather extraordinary. What else is not on your agenda? Something that I've been asking about for several months now is the contract with Liebert Cassidy Whitmore. And how did you end up entering into a retroactive contract when, at the time, there were seemingly no personnel matters at that time? So I'd still like that question answered. I'm looking for your 2015-16 audit. Having audited financials at this stage of the game would help you when you go to adopt the next budget, which is what's on your agenda tonight. There's no district administrator's report. Historically, the district's administrator's report is basically your window every 2 weeks into what's going on at the district and what your district administrator is doing. And that's not here tonight. And there's been several times this year that those have been skipped, and I don't quite understand why. So what's not on the agenda is what's the problem. That's my problem, and I think you have business to be doing, and those things should be brought back to you. Policies and procedures is another. Those are just off the top of my head, so thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else?
Chris Victorine, Oceano. I'm referencing the third quarter fiscal year 2016-17 budget performance review. I'd like clarification on where the $5,561,123 figure came from. It's listed in Table 3 on the fund balance as the total of all three funds for fiscal year end 2016-17. Is it actually fiscal year end balance for 15-16 since we haven't reached year end? Or was it derived from another source? Thank you.
Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Patty Moreno from Oceano, a ratepayer, and I want to read this into the record. In October 2016, the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, Central Coast Water Board, and South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District entered into a stipulated order number R3-2016-0045, settlement agreement and stipulation for entry of administrative civil order number R3-2120041. As part of the settlement agreement, the Central Coast Water Board agreed to consider as an enhanced compliance action 221,962.52 of the total spent by the district to construct a grit removal system at the district's treatment facility. This amount was considered a suspended liability until the project was completed. This letter confirms, oh, by the way, this is directed to Mr. Huebner. This letter confirms that the district has completed the grit removal system project as documented in the district's March 3, 2017 letter and has met its obligations under this part of the stipulated order number R3-2016-0045. This letter also terminates any other further enhanced compliance action obligations the district has as it pertains to this liability and results in the permanent waiver of enhanced compliance action suspended liability. The district's March 3, 2017 letter included invoices documenting the funds spent by the district on grit removal system. The total cost of the project was $525,605.93. The invoices also show that the project started in May of 2016 before the settlement agreement was finalized and even before the district was first proposed to this project as an enhanced compliant action. During settlement negotiations, Central Coast Water Board staff was not aware that this project had already begun, and district management did not provide adequate transparency regarding the project's status. Central Coast Water Board first became aware that this project started prior to the settlement's completion, following the receipt of the invoices. For any further settlements, the Central Coast Water Board will not accept any proposed enhanced compliance actions which have already been scheduled to be completed or already initiated.
Anyone else?
Patricia Price, Arroyo Grande. The Water Quality Board has sent two letters of admonition in the last month because of Mr. Huebner's actions, not because of plant operations. Director Austin suggested last meeting discussing the board's responsibility to protect the administrator from public harassment. I would suggest that the board consider protecting the district and itself from the liability of ignoring the actions of the administrator and not taking actions to correct them. Our average monthly legal bills since the beginning of the year have been $23,000, and the budget seems to suggest we'll spend that much in the next year. That concerns me a lot. On May 17th, the board meeting was canceled for no apparent reason. Mr. Huebner did tell me when we met that there was not enough to bring to the board to warrant the cost of a meeting, and I begged to differ at the time. I thought there were many things that needed to be brought forward. I have a question. What is the criteria for his evaluation? Do we need an outside facilitator? Because I read in his contract that one would be provided if we needed one. I would suggest we get one and get some kind of a criteria set up. He hasn't fulfilled his contractual obligations. He hasn't met with the directors every week, or with all of the directors every week. He hasn't, to my knowledge, presented a strategic plan that is ongoing. And it was supposed to happen as soon as practicable after the employee's start date. That also was in his contract. We have two very competent employees on paid leave who have been given no reason for the action, and there's been no effort on Mr. Huebner's part to resolve the problem or to even say what the problem is. And I'm wondering why Human Resources has not been involved, is not being involved, why we can't sit down and get this straightened out. The costs are adding up. We've got double staff. We don't need them. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Good evening, Mary Lucy Oceano. I too am a ratepayer. I see themes as well. I have to agree with that. There's a couple things is that I was hoping this wasn't going to be passed tonight, but there's a few things that I would suggest adding to the budget, and I'll talk about that later. But what I'd like you to take into consideration is that I see the line item for brine disposal has increased dramatically as a source of revenue, and so I'd like the board to have a discussion regarding, you know, the dumping of those products and stuff and how that impacts the plant. Every time there is a threat of litigation, by law, you have to trigger legal counsel, and every time that trigger is pulled, it costs the ratepayers $300 an hour or something like that. So every time a staff says, you know, I don't like how something's going, you know, and I just might sue, that triggers, you know, legal counsel, and the clock starts running. And so I've looked at, you know, the litigation that's going on and stuff, because the legal bills are high. And there is one common theme throughout every single situation. And unfortunately, it's a personnel issue, but it is one employee that is consistently in every single legal problem we have. So I think that needs to be discussed, and maybe it's time to go out to RFP for legal counsel, and that's also something I'd like your board to consider. But every time somebody threatens to sue or something, it costs people money. So you can't say on one hand, you know, the legal bills are really, really high, but I just don't like this, how this is working out, and I'm going to sue it. I mean, it's a contradiction, and I'm not quite sure if people understand that. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Ratepayer Arroyo Grande. I noticed the last meeting went until 12:30, basically. That seems incredibly long. I know in Arroyo Grande, at 11 o'clock, the council has to take a vote as to whether or not to continue a meeting. I don't understand why these meetings are going so long. This is a pretty simple district. It shouldn't be taking this long. I don't know how in the world anyone who has worked a full day is now sitting up here, you know, every other week and trying to get stuff done when you're dog tired. I'd like to see you guys discuss that, to possibly put a time of which you vote to have the meeting continue. Also, I'd like to see on a agenda, what's the board's responsibility in defending the administrator against slander, defamation, or libel? And also, I'd like to know what it cost us to have the police here every meeting lately. That's all. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Debbie Peterson, City of Grover Beach. I live in the City of Grover Beach, and I am a ratepayer also. I wanted to read to you a resolution that was passed in 2015, because we have had a lot of comment about the way we treat one another as board members, as employers, as members of the public. And so I wanted to remind everyone of what was signed and agreed. It's whereas we, the district manager, chair, board members, committees, appointees, and staff of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Community Services District, in order to ensure civility and civil discourse in all of our meetings, pledge our commitment to the following best practices of civility and civil discourse. We pledge our commitment to respect the right of all people to hold different opinions in all our meetings, to avoid rhetoric intended to humiliate, malign, or question the motivation of those whose opinions are different from ours in all our meetings, to strive to understand differing perspectives in all our meetings, to choose words carefully in all our meetings, to speak truthfully without accusation and avoid distortion. We pledge our commitments against incivility in all forms, whenever and wherever it occurs in all our meetings. We commit ourselves to building a civil political community in which each person is respected and spirited public and political debate is aimed at the betterment of the South County of San Luis Obispo and its people, and not the disparagement of those with whom we disagree. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the South San Luis Obispo Sanitation Community Services District shall promote the use of and adherence to these principles of civility and civil discourse in conducting business with appointed and elected officials, staff, and citizens. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close it, public comment, and bring it back to the board. We're going to move on to our consent agenda. And we have five items on consent tonight. They are all listed. I'm not going to read them out. Let me see if there's any board members that would like to pull any items from consent.
Item 5A, and I have a question or comment on 5E.
Okay. Linda, anything?
No.
Okay. So we're going to pull item 5A, and then Jim, what's your question on 5E?
I noticed on the operations report, which I see that's on consent, which I think it's a benefit to the public to have that operations report presented to the public rather than just have it on the consent agenda. But one of the items on there is the oil change on the fixed film reactor distributor drive. And I was wondering what the results of that oil change and sampling were, if we had either water or metal fines or anything like that, any deleterious condition noted during that oil change process.
I'd like to have Michael Jones, our interim plant superintendent, if he would, if he has an answer for that, please.
Unfortunately, right now I don't have those results in front of me. Excuse me, but I have reviewed the results, and there was some water within the oil and some I guess not metal scraps, but some
like,
metal
like
within
dust
the,
or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Okay, very good. So then we've got items 5B, C, D, and E. Let me see if there is anyone from the community that would like to speak on the consent agenda. Please come forward.
Julie Tacker, and first I'd like to speak. Are you taking anything individually? I misunderstood.
No, we are. This
that's
is
a block.
The that's right.
Okay. With regard to the warrants, I have a I'm very concerned about.
Hang on a second.
Sorry?
Yeah, we actually did pull the warrants.
You did pull the
we'll
warrants. Okay,
the warrants
then we'll come
this,
back to come back to that.
Yeah, comments on 5B, C, D, and E.
So the minutes of last meeting, I would like to speak to that, and specifically to the comments that I made, because I'm most familiar with those. with respect to item 8B, the anticipated litigation discussion, and I spoke to the comment of the Public Records Act and how your district administrator, I believe, is abusing it. And whoever typed this up says that I was asking for different compensation reports. I asked for the compensation report. And that there are actually four, I have four different documents that are supposed to be only one. So something is awry with that particular piece of the public record. And so that one was glaring to me. And that's it for now. I'll come back on the warrant.
Okay, very good. Anyone else?
Debbie Peterson. I live in Grover Beach. I wanted to just go over a few things that were in the minutes. And at the end of the meeting, Mayor Scholes, or I should say Chair Scholes, mentioned a situation where I had requested at a Grover Beach City Council meeting that the questions that the council members asked be circulated with the second reading of the budget. And I wanted just to make it very clear that I didn't ask that it be circulated to council members, because that's probably a Brown Act violation, but I asked that it would be included in the staff report. And so I wanted to clarify that and make sure that the public is understanding that I wasn't asking that we have a Brown Act violation. I was asking that, in fact, we provide more information to the public so that they know what our thought process is. And I also wanted to just go over a few things in the minutes that I think were typos. On the top of item 5B, page 8, it says I spoke about a plan to expand funds. I think that should be expend, not expand. And then on page 5B, page 11, it says that I stated there's a $300,000 income for showing for waste. And in fact, what I said is John Clemens is the one who established our brine program, and that's now bringing us an additional $300,000 income. So that was kind of an inaccurate comment or inaccurate minute. And then on page item 5B, page 13, the second full paragraph down, I think that probably should be reworded. It says, and if they thought it was appropriate to disrespect a board of directors, and what I had said is a fellow director. And I believe that was all for this. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this. And again, I'm going to correct Ms. Peterson. I referred to when council members and board members ask questions of whether it's a city manager or a district administrator, the responses to those questions are often given to the other board members. That was the reference. It was not asking someone to violate the Brown Act. So let's move on. We have items 5B, 5C, 5D, and E. If there's no additional discussion, we can take these all in one motion.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve on the consent agenda item 5B, 5C, 5D, and 5E.
There's a second. There's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion, let's do a roll call, please.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Chair Scholes?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to item 5A. This is approval of warrants. And, Jim, I think you had requested this be pulled, so I'll give you the floor.
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note on here that we have $27,136 in legal bills, which once again is staggering. And I want to make sure that everyone understands I'm not objecting to the rate of our district legal counsel, but the wildly inordinate number of hours that are being expended. I also note that some of the charges are from Downey Brand, who were the litigators against the State Water Quality Board with the litigation that was brought by the district related to the 2010 wastewater spill. And I'm concerned why that there's a $2,500 outside counsel legal bill still from that firm. So, again, I've asked a number of times that the inordinate legal fees, which are approaching $250,000, well over $200,000 this last year, that's probably a couple of head count at least. That's certainly a fairly significant project at the plant. This is out of control, and I can't support it, so I won't be voting for this tonight.
Okay, very good. Do you have any questions, Linda?
No.
Legal counsel, I'm not sure if you were heard. I think Board Member Hill brings up the Downey brand. Could you address that?
Yes. Good evening, Board of Directors. The district has contracted with Downey Brand for specialized legal advice regarding the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is beyond my expertise.
Okay. All right. Let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone who has comments on item 5A.
Julie Tacker, and I will speak to the Downey Brand matter. Is there a contract that we can see? As I recall, the last contract they worked under had expired long before and was never renewed. I'm unaware of any litigation with the Water Board, so this is news, and it is alarming. Mr. Trujillo and Ms. Stockton's combined work around $25,000. Mr. Trujillo, I will give you, it is 2 months of his work and one of Ms. Stockton, but those bills, some of that is public records requests, and I would just say, as a frequent user of the Public Record Act, that if public records were answered adequately the first time, there would not be subsequent requests for either the actual record that was requested the first time. I have one particular request that began on May 15th, and there's been four iterations trying to get one piece of documentation, and I copied you. Maybe we need to bring that to the board in a in an agenda item, because it's correspondence that I've copied to you, and it doesn't seem to be changing how Mr. Huebner responds to the Public Record Act. With regard to the voluminous total over the last year, when you get into perhaps the bond market and you need bond counsel, I've had to hire bond counsel as a board member, and that was 10 years ago, $800 an hour. So it's just beginning. That's where you really want to save your money, is when you need a bond counselor to formulate your loan should you end up on in the bond market. Last point, the payroll mentioned here but not in your cash reports is $32,252.68. That's one pay period, and that is more than normal by about $2,000 to $3,000, and if that is that, if that becomes a trend, then we're talking about $6,000 a month, and that's somebody's wage or somebody's wages, and I think that needs to be explained.
Anyone else?
Patricia Price. I'm really concerned about the Downey Brand legal bill, because last week when it was brought up that the two of you had been misunderstood, you were transparent, you had said you were going to contact the Water Board and talk to them about that, like they were wrong, and that is how, that's how we started with the fine with in the Wallace years with John Wallace. So I'm very concerned. I mean, there are so many parallels here of the Wallace years. I'm really wondering what's going on. I just want you to know that the public is watching. We're not going to go away. We're going to stay here. We're going to watch. And this doesn't look good.
Mary, this is Yoshiano. I want to thank Patricia Price. You're absolutely right. The community is watching. And I have to thank Julie Tackert, because I could never understand why somebody would bog down a system so bad over public records. It's a small administrative staff to have 30, 40, 50 public records requests constantly going in to prove a point. That the point is that the system is broke. And that's what Julie's been trying to prove. And you know what? I can work with that. When we have a $17,000 legal bill, all through the year, we're over $200,000 in budget because of public records requests. The amount of time. Okay, so the system's broke. Let's fix it then, instead of penalizing us ratepayers. It's like, don't beat us up because the system's broke. Let's fix the system then. It's us who pays for it. It's Patricia Price who pays for it. You know, and so by bogging down the legal system and costing us $200,000 when, you know what? Let's sit down and figure out how we can do public records in a more responsive, timely way without sucking the life out of the administrator, without sucking the life out of legal. I mean, that's all I can think of to do, but I have to thank Julie for getting up here and admitting that she was bogging down the system and costing us ratepayers hundreds of thousands of dollars. So please agendize that. And if we can fix that, I think that a lot of us would sleep better.
Anyone else? Okay, everyone. Let's let everyone talk and not.
Dr. Arnoldson, Grover Beach. Previous speaker was speaking about the cost of litigation and what that's done to raise our fees. I mean, the cost of potential litigation from employees. Basically, I think she was referring that it was one person that was causing our district these problems. If it's the plant manager, who I'm assuming she's talking about, I haven't seen him draw a sword, which means I haven't seen him bring a lawyer to the table. I've seen him ask everybody in this room to sit down and communicate and solve the problem. As I spoke last meeting, there is a way to do progressive discipline. So if he's a problem, go through progressive discipline, get rid of him. And then as far as public records, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to do public records. If there are records that can be released, release them. Send somebody an email, send it digital. It doesn't have to go through the court system or the Senate or the whatever. It's not that tough. It's really a simple thing. The district administrator's secretary did it for several months. Got taken care of. It wasn't that expensive.
Is there anyone else?
Ms. Peterson got up here and read the code of civility that you guys are supposed to follow. We've got a police officer out there who I believe is supposed to keep the disruptions down for the main body of this meeting. It would be really nice if I could sit through a meeting without having to listen to certain people in the audience have their 2 cents worth through the whole thing. Please hold order in the meeting. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Chris Victorine, Oceano. I have you down here. High legal fees come up at every board meeting. They seem to come up multiple times at board meetings. And I do understand the client-attorney privilege. However, to remain completely silent does not help with the trust issues that we have between the district and the ratepayers. A little effort to explain the benefits of the legal fees and how long they will continue at this rate will help the ratepayers to at least feel that we're being heard. For example, the Liebert, Cassidy, and Whitmore contract has been raised multiple times at board meetings. backdating the contracts may not be a best practice, but there are legitimate reasons for it. An explanation would foster trust.
Thank you for those comments. If there's no one else, I'm going to close this, bring it back. And I will agree with Ms. Welch. I'm asking everyone speak, and let's hold our comments in the audience down. I think that's just respectful for everyone. So, okay? All right. So we are on item 5A. This is approval of the warrant. Is there any additional discussion, or is there a motion on these items, on this item?
So I'll make a motion. We approve the warrants.
I'm going to second that motion, and I think Ms. Victorine brings up a really good point. I don't know how we'll have to figure out how to provide more explanation regarding the legal fees and whatnot. But these are warrants for services already rendered, so I'm going to second that motion. Roll call.
Director Hill?
Respectfully but emphatically, no.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Chair Scholes?
Yes. Motion carries 2-1. Let's move on to item 6A, which is adoption of the final budget for the fiscal year 2017-18. Mr. Huebner, you have the floor.
If you'll give me one moment, I'll bring up the presentation. I'm going to ask
F5.
I minimized it a little bit too much here. Thank you, Chair Scholes, directors, members of the audience. This is Gerhard Huebner. This is item 6A. This is consideration of adoption of the final budget for fiscal year 2017-18. Page down, page up. I'm going to ask the gentlemen, we usually have a clicker. I'm not getting the keyboard to at least operate. Thanks. Well, I'm gonna start. Just in case, obviously, if things don't always work out on the technical side. So a little bit of background. As you know, at the June 7th board meeting, the board received a presentation including written material comprised of the staff report, associated budget spreadsheets on the proposed draft budget for fiscal year 17-18, beginning July 1st, 2017. And that's attachment one to the staff report that you see before you today. And you'll see me reference the various attachments as we go forward. Also was have staff return back to this meeting June 21st with a final budget for fiscal year 2017-18 for consideration and adoption. So if you'll see in my staff report, I've tried to highlight, bring to your attention some of the changes that we noted either through board comments or comments we received from the public, or even internal discussions in the intervening time. So first, I want to bring your attention. We're proposing under Fund 19, under professional certifications and license, an increase from 1,000 to 3,000, or increase of 2,000 to reflect anticipated certifications. Under Fund 19, the next one, you'll see reference to the Regional Board Administrative Civil Liability, that's what ACL stands for, and supplemental environmental project, and this is the regional groundwater model. So we received a letter actually from the county of San Luis Obispo that the check that we had written to the Bay Foundation for that SEP was being canceled, basically what they call stale. The check had not been cashed or deposited, and so they were canceling the check. So We therefore need to include, and we've had included the $221,000 back into this budget, and also as well to the fund balance, because obviously it won't be expended this year. So that's reflected in this bullet point. Moving on, under Fund 26, for the Rio Grande Cherry Avenue Sewer Bridge Maintenance Project, which will actually be considered as part of tonight's agenda, we are proposing to increase the amount we initially put down from $250,000 to $280,200. That's an increase of $30,200 to reflect the recent revised bid proposal. We had proposed a project in Fund 26, the primary clarifier number 2, the drive, the bridge, scraper, and some engineering support. At this point, talking with our Michael Jones, we proposing that to be deferred to fiscal year 18-19 to provide additional funds for the repair of the primary digester number 1 in the event it requires additional funding. So we had put a placeholder for the repair of the digester. As you recall, we've had the discussion about moving forward. The board authorized us to do so. Once that digester is cleaned out, we will have it inspected for structural integrity and then come up with some cost figures in terms of what that might entail. And at this point, I don't have firm figures, so to be safe, we're just at this point proposing that those funds, or that project be deferred, and that would increase decrease $320,000 and increase $320,000 to Fund 19. We have, moving on, we have different project numbers have been assigned to professional services. The electrician integrator, now we have a new number, the number that you see on the screen. The same for the Phase 1, Phase 2 trunk sewer video logging, jetting, and cleaning, and the I&I study. Again, we've given it different project numbers for tracking into the future. There's a correction from the June 7, 2000 staff report on staffing levels. Whereas it was correct stating that the staffing levels would remain the same as the last fiscal year. However, the list that I had provided in terms of the numbers was not. It's now correctly listed in the salary schedule in terms of the classification and the total number of 11. And as you recall, this is a correction that we made and the board approved back in March of this year. So that's just reflecting what you adopted, and so there's really no change in that regard, just to make it correct. This just states what I mentioned, correction from the June 7th meeting. This is the list of the 11 positions. With that being said, we do have one vacancy. I want to also mention that there is no change to the list of benefits for the staff. That's Exhibit A. Any changes, or for example, that might come from negotiating an MOU with SEIU would come before your board at a later time and may be reflected with a change in Exhibit A. All other budget items remain the same in the budget proposed for consideration today. We did publish a public notice in the San Luis Obispo Tribune. That's provided as attachment number 3. So I'd like to walk you through a little bit of the math. If you'll look at the budget in the consolidated sheet, these are the same numbers that you see on that sheet. We'll start really in the analogy I want to use is if you had a checking account, and we operate on a cash basis. So if you were to start the year in this case, or start the month, and we'll just use the various funds, this is what sits roughly. This is projection, of course. What we do is we look at what's in our account. We see what projects are going to carry over or be expended this year versus ones that aren't. And we come up with a projected starting fund balance. So for Fund 19, roughly, 1,472,000 is what we're projecting in terms of the starting point. And that includes a reserve that we put aside back last fall, $248,000 and some change. For Fund 20, we project we're starting roughly at the $3 million mark, $3,050,000. Fund 26, $240,000, and then you get the total of $4,762,000 as your total of the three accounts. Moving on to revenue. So when you look, and these are values that for Fund 19, as I mentioned before, Fund 19 comes primarily from wastewater charges from our member agencies, Aurora Grande, City of Grover Beach, and the Oceana Community Service District. Fund 20 is connection fees. Essentially, that's the connection fees that we get from development. There's also a few other miscellaneous charges that we also get. Going back to Fund 19, I also want to mention certainly that when you mention brine disposal or grant reimbursement, there's funds revenue that also come into those funds, and they're noted in the budget spreadsheets. We also, in Fund 26, as I mentioned before, is really an artifact that we park money in there to do projects. It does not generate any revenue. So it starts with a certain fund balance. We project how many projects we're going to fund and the money needed, and then we make transfers from either Fund 19 or Fund 20. So all total, at least if you look at the slide, we project from all sources of revenue a slightly over $5 million, $5,067,950. So now you go, so you take essentially your fund balance and you add your revenue, and that's all the money you have available to spend on projects, programs, operating. Now you come sort of to the expenditure side of the ledger. So I've listed here, and again, try to be consistent with the spreadsheet you see. On Fund 19, you have $2,681,070, and I can see, and moving forward, you have the other charges, $322,000, which includes the fine I mentioned, as well as contingency, and you can see that I've asterisked that. You can see the totals. So if you total it up, it's with all of them, it's $3,851,400. Similarly, you go to Fund 20, other charges, and total capital outlay, and that gets you slightly over $2,000,000, $2,040,000. And then Fund 20, as I mentioned, really it's the sum of the projects that are proposed and listed, and it's $1,017,200. So you now take the money that you're going to spend, you subtract that, and you get your projected ending balances. So in Fund 19, that's $2,535,550. Fund 20, slightly over $1 million, $1,163,000. And that totals at the end $3,698,550. So that's what you would have in your banking account or your checking account at the end of, by 6/30/2018. So to put this all again in kind of a balance or perspective, I put the beginning balance, which I previously reported to you. You take the ending balance, and this provides you with the net change. Now you can look at that and say, well, Fund 19, yes, we are going to increase by over $1 million. But you're also going to be spending money that's accumulated in Fund 20. And that'll be slightly slightly over $1,800,000. Fund 20, Fund 26, you zero it out, use the money. Again, it's the money you park in there, money you transfer. So all total, if you approve all the projects today and everything that we've provided, you will be reducing essentially your cash balance at the end of the day by slightly over $1 million. That's the math. It's quite simple as I've presented to you. There was also comments last meeting, and hopefully we won't get. I've decided to put this up here for you today just to give you an idea. This was one of the charts that the Bartle Wells Associates gentleman put up at the last several meetings ago. I believe it was at the March meeting. And this is where he projected when we go debt service, how we would pay for it if we do a loan specifically for the redundancy project. Now remember, state revolving fund loan does not have to be paid back until roughly a year, sometime after the plant becomes operation or construction is finished. So sometime in the 2021 time frame is when our debt service would require us to start making those payments. And you can see that's essentially projected here. That's the brown on the graph at the top. So the revenues are projected to be able to do the debt service, and as well as have some additional monies, and you can see it goes up over time, but let's just take for next year, $700,000 for capital projects, $800,000 and $1 million over time. So it doesn't just allow for redundancy project, it also allows us to keep up the repairs and replace some of the facilities, some of our facilities at our site. I also decided this afternoon to kind of look at past years, and this is really to kind of look at when I heard the term deficit budget. Deficit budget can mean a couple things, but really looking towards sound fiduciary advice or looking at what really makes a budget structurally out of balance is really your operating expenses, your staffing. If your staffing were to increase significantly or your operating expense were significantly, you would have higher and higher operating expenses. And if you didn't have the revenue, then you would be over time structurally in balance. That's not the case that I see here with this budget. We are proposing some one-time expenditures, and you'll see it in my conclusion, one-time projects, one-time programs that won't necessarily carry over year to year. So you're utilizing some of the cash that you have in some of your accounts, pay for that versus increasing your operating expenses over time, which may require you to increase rates or cut other funds. So this slide is really just to put up there and give you a perspective. And I pulled these right out of the old budget sheets that were provided to me when I started. And you can see going back several years, we're right in line in terms of total operating expenses. And this is Fund 19, which is the staffing, the benefits, some of the professional services and other things. These are just numbers that I pulled off old budget sheets. And they're in line with past years. In fact, in some cases, they're less. For order for you to enact the budget today, we've included Resolution 2017-369. That's Attachment 4. Provides the documentation that the board considered and adopted a budget for fiscal year 2017-18. We've also prepared Resolution 2017-370. That's Attachment 5. That incorporates the salary schedule that I mentioned earlier, position classification and salary steps within the prospective ranges for the fiscal year. We also have Exhibit A, which is attached to the resolution, describes the district's benefit package provided to employees. As I mentioned, has not changed at all since the board last looked at it, which was as recent as this past March. So in conclusion, there's no structural deficit that I can see. Funding some one-time projects through drawdown and Fund 20 cash balance for our redundancy, and that includes both the design, the support, and the coastal hazard plan development. You also have the trunk sewer line, the video jetting cleaning, and the I&I study. Again, those are one-time things. You will have to do, of course, the video jetting and cleaning periodically over time, but those are, I think, on a 5 or 10 year time frame in any event. There is a increase, as I've shown you, in Fund 19 ending fund balance, and there's a reduction in Fund 20 ending fund balance. Our recommendation today, after consideration and any feedback, is that adoption of the fiscal year 2017-18 budget and adoption of the resolutions 2017-369 and 370. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for the detailed staff report. Let me see if there's any questions. Linda, you have any questions?
No, I don't think I do.
No. Jim?
I have a number of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the first page of the report, we talk about continuing last year's efforts to complete several previously neglected programs, yet I note that this budget specifically proposes to defer work on the number two primary clarifier. How is that different than programs that were postponed in the past?
Well, neglect can appear, can occur over a number of years. That's just the same language that I utilized in the last year's draft report and carried forward. It's essentially the idea is that maintenance that should have occurred or project that should have occurred did not. With the new CIP, we've attempted to update that. Ideally, we'd like to do everything. Certainly, we included that project because staff had indicated to me, and that was on our schedule for maintenance. So we are certainly happy to include it back in. We just felt if we had to potentially defer money or find money, we need to get that digester repaired and back in service. And conversations that I had with Mr. Jones was if we could do it, be great. But certainly we want to have it next year for sure. But again, we're open to putting it back in. It's not a question of it being neglected. It's essentially priorities.
Yeah, it seems to me to be, you know, perhaps a change of terminology, but the same. The same reasoning, which is you don't have enough money to do everything you want to do. And I think that is probably what we're seeing here. From my question regarding the oil change on the fixed film reactor, which if you'll recall is one of the items that is not redundant in our secondary process treatment, is there a reason that we're not scheduling some maintenance overhaul replacement of that equipment? Because if we're seeing oil in the water and metal fines water in the oil and metal fines in the oil, it seems to me that that's something we should probably look at. That would indicate to me perhaps impending failure or problems with that equipment, and I don't see that in the budget here.
Well, I'll try and answer the question first, and then I'll have Mr. Jones. But as I indicated in a past district administrator report, one of the things that came to my attention is the work order system. And that work order system was specifically designed to do exactly as you describe: oil changes, maintenance, routine. And that's essentially built into the staff and some of the equipment and, some of the supplies that we do. And discovered that there was a backlog of over close to 268 going back 2 years. So that's an operational issue which may or may not be manifested in this oil change and what we see here. So I've mentioned before it's a priority, and it will continue to be at least a priority as long as I'm district administrator, that we do maintenance, we keep up with the maintenance, and avoid exactly, Director Hill, what you mentioned. But that doesn't necessarily respond to a specific budget item that I can see.
Okay, I see. I don't believe the issue was with the routine maintenance of the oil change itself. Rather, it was what may have been seen during that process. A couple of things with respect to Fund 20. Fund 20 is the expansion fund historically that is funded through, as you correctly indicated, hookup fees, fundamentally from development. Mm-hmm. And it was intended in the day that would be for expansion of the capacity of the plant as the area grew in size and more subdivisions were put in and more hookups would be, and the thought process back in the 60s when this was originally set up would be that as the area took on more of the character from a couple of small farm towns to something more resembling Orange County, that eventually the capacity of the plant would have to be increased to support that expansion, and thus the developer fees and so forth were, in my view, appropriately collected for that pending expansion when it might be necessary. But as it turns out, the dramatic reduction in water use and water-saving appliances and so forth has virtually obviated the need to expand the plant at all. And in terms of process capacity and in terms of volume. So while the designation of Fund 20 as an expansion fund, I don't think is probably something that the board should look at as being somewhat obsolete, perhaps. Perhaps the board would like to come back and look at that, but I think there's restrictions on what we can spend that money for due to the means under which it was collected and the purpose for which it was collected. And I don't see that videoing the trunk sewers, jetting and cleaning, even the INI study speaks to me to routine maintenance items, maybe recurring, as you indicated, on a five-year schedule, but nonetheless maintenance. And I don't see a nexus to expansion with that. So I would question the use of Fund 20 for those items. There's a couple other items on Fund 20. The cogen thing, that was certainly not part of the original plant design. That arguably might be expansion. The joint EIR with PISMO for the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, that was certainly not contemplated and might arguably have a nexus to expansion. But routine maintenance of video cleaning and INI studies, I don't see that connection. We also mentioned a reserve account, and I'm wondering what we're setting that aside for. I know our rate increase spoke largely to the redundancy project, so hopefully funding will be set aside for the redundancy project because that was the largest reason that was provided in our documented justification of the rate increase was for the redundancy project. Salaries and wages, if I recall, and I may be wrong, you mentioned that we approved the positions about March or so, and I thought there was a maintenance assistant in there, and I don't see that in this budget. That would be on attachment, item 6A, attachment 2, page 3, down near the bottom. I see operators, plant, student interns, bookkeeper, secretary, and the district administrator. I don't see a maintenance assistant. And the last personnel roster that I saw had that position approved and filled, so I just wondered what the discrepancy is there, if I have the latest or if that was dropped off our employee schedule.
Oh, okay. Specifically that particular one? Sure. So that one had previously been listed as a 0.5. Just thinking back when the discussion was, we have a retired annuitant. I'm not sure if that was where it was initially considered because he works almost a half-time at the plant, and that might have been the position that was initially slotted. But really, the plant worker is the correct classification, and so we corrected that, worked with Alicia Lara, our HR consultant, in refining that. And so I'd have to double check whether maintenance assistant or it was maintenance something else. I don't have that in front of me, but okay. Other than that, this is the correct listing of how our position should be. We shouldn't have anything half-time. And so one other thing is the one of our operators underfills one of the operator three classifications. So even though you see plant operator one, he actually resides under an underfill under that plant operator two. So we don't have. So,
okay.
So hopefully that provides some clarification.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it might be a good idea just when time's available to, you know, update our documentation in terms of our authorized positions.
Certainly.
Then fund 196065 is titled Unfunded Liability. Is that the PERS liability?
Yes.
Professional services, this is on item 6A, attachment 2, page 5. And about the third one down is fund 197071, which is professional services attorney's fees. And we're budgeting there $96,000 for routine attorney's fees. And I note that that's $8,000 a month, which, again, for a single purpose district strikes me as inordinately high. I would suggest reducing the amount to $36,000, which is still generous in my view at $3,000 a month, and that any exceedance of that smaller budgeted amount be brought to the board so that the board can keep closer control over the monies that is spent for attorneys, which again, as members of the public have commented and I've commented for months now, is in my view unsustainable and out of control. That would comment would also go to the outside counsel litigation item, which I think could be reduced similarly. On Schedule A1 for Fund 19 is Item 2017A119, which is Moino Pumps. And I believe that we just funded the Moino Pumps for replacement. Why then is that on this budget?
You are correct. We did fund, I believe, at the last meeting, the meeting before, one of those. Michael, perhaps you could provide me. We need another one.
Yeah,
the one we funded was a redundant one on sludge pump for the primary number one, and this one will be a redundant sludge pump for our primary number two clarifier.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. 2017A110 says plant degeneration control. Can you explain what that is?
I wish I could, but I'm going to have to defer to Michael put together this list with the rest of the operators, and what's the nomenclature, Michael?
That's just a fancy word for, I can't even think right now, excuse me, corrosion control, sorry.
No. Okay.
Okay.
So that would be possibly things on the order of painting or recoating things or corrosion inhibitors for systems and so forth?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Again, on capital outlay 28016, I object to those items, the trunk sewer video logging, jetting and cleaning, and infiltration being called capital items. Those seem to me to be purely maintenance related. Um, I note that we did defer the primary clarifier to save money or redirect it to other funds, not unlike some of the actions that have been taken in years previous. Schedule B2, detail of laboratory replacement projects in Fund 26, the last item, laboratory calibrations, also speaks more to me of a maintenance activity than a capital project. And then my last comment on the budget package is on item 6A, attachment 5, page 1, which is the resolution 2016-370, and it talks about administration of the compensation plan, where you may hire individuals into different steps in the process, and typically the lowest step in a grade is step A, and it proceeds to step B and progresses to higher steps of compensation as experience and merit would warrant. But when we hire previously experienced individuals from other jurisdictions or with perhaps advanced degrees or some other reason to place them not in the initial step, the district manager, it says, shall have the authority to place an individual at step B or C. The immediately preceding sentence talks about unless authorized by the district administrator. So it talks about the district administrator and then the district manager. So I'm not sure who we're talking about there and who has this authority. And finally, it says, the chair of the board of directors shall make the decision to hire any employee at step D or higher. And I have to object to that because the chair of the board, with due respect, has no authority in addition to any of the other directors. We're equal. We have equal authority in all matters, except, of course, we defer to the chair for running the meetings. So I would suggest that that be changed from the chair of the board to the board of directors, such that a quorum of the board would be required to do that.
Mike, only one response on that particular one is I think the district manager, that's a remnant that should have been changed when we updated this resolution, and that may be just an old version of it. I also note at the top the resolution should say 2000.
Okay, so we don't need to wordsmith this.
No.
Let's get to a point where there's a motion, and that motion
can
include those amendments.
Sure.
Okay, those are my questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. So, Gerhard, I just want to get some clarification and kind of redirect this. So you were put a slide up, and you're basically saying that this total budget is in line with prior 4 years regarding the total budget, the number?
So this is a comparison of just one element in Fund 19. If you look at total operating expenses, which is one of the most significant items in your budget, which is, you know, your professional services, your supplies, your salaries, your benefits, how we operate, bread and butter of the organization.
Yeah. Okay. And then regarding the recommendation for a deferral on the primary clarifier, just to clarify, that was you had worked with Mr. Jones and other operators and identified and said that would be okay. We wouldn't put the plant in any jeopardy.
So I don't want to put any words in his mouth, but what I did is after the last board meeting, I wanted to sit down with him again and reemphasize or re-review everything that we had here to make sure we hadn't missed anything, anything we needed to include, anything adjustments we had made. The professional search was a recommendation that he made, and I said I concurred with it. The digester is going to be – it's a critical thing. It's on a critical path because once it's cleaned – and we're proceeding with that, and we'll be doing that this summer. we need to have that thing evaluated, and we need to, we may need to come back with you quickly with some type of repair. And I, you know, if it becomes more than $200,000, then it becomes a question of where would the money come from. Certainly, we have sufficient fund balance. Even at the end, we project close to $5 million. But this is just me being a little bit cautious in that regard. I mentioned you can certainly put it back in, and we'll do our best to complete that project as well.
Gotcha.
Michael, you want to add anything?
Thank you. So for the folks who are here or at home who don't have the benefit of this report, maybe you can just clarify the difference between the reserve fund and contingency, and that you've laid out contingency in Fund 19. So maybe you can just...
Sure. The reserve fund is specified by your resolution. We had a separate item a year ago. We had that discussion, and it has specific... it's supposed to be... I have it right in front of me, but on the top of my head, it's supposed to be for emergencies, unexpected things. It's extraordinary things that occur. That was the idea with setting up the reserve. To a certain degree, you have another reserve. It's an unrestricted reserve because that's the cash that you have in the bank. And you have, as I pointed out, you have millions of dollars. But the idea was to sequester a certain amount each year and allow that to build up over time for and really be for extraordinary expenses. Contingency is something that we put in, and this is my experience working with another special district and with the county, is you typically have things that come up. And so without having to go to fund balance, essentially, you know, it's a go-to for a specific year. And this year we went to it a couple times, but in the end I think there was roughly $60,000 left in that contingency. And of course that just is money that rolls back into the fund balance and you have it. So it's just an additional tool, I think a very effective tool, that allows you when projects come in overbid and we get quotes that you can access it without having to cannibalize perhaps another project.
Okay, and then I know that Board Member Hill brought up the question regarding the trunk sewer video logging, the jet cleaning, all that being in Fund 20, that there are more maintenance than capital, and I would agree with him. That was actually one of my questions, so maybe you can provide some additional clarification on that.
Sure. So we provided a little bit of background on the Fund 20 and the use of that, and I guess it'll just maybe be, unless you want clarification, we have an opinion, a legal opinion, and I've asked them to review that. We are the opinion that these projects are appropriate for that fund, that the board has discretion to fund any and all of the projects that you see. I would also point out that perhaps the redundancy project was included as a Fund 20 expense last year and the previous year as well. The cogen has been on, and I have the budgets in front of me, has been on there for a number of years. You know, of course, hindsight is, should that discussion may have occurred back then, well, if it did or didn't, it was included, and we've expended the cogen debt service out of that fund for a number of years. For redundancy, well, the redundancy project is a $1.5 million expense, and absent using Fund 20, you would have to go to Fund 19 and cannibalize a heck of a lot of other things. We feel it's appropriate. The last thing is the connection fees have a direct impact, development has a direct impact on our collection system, our trunk system. And so when you add folks to our system, you add more flow to the collection system, which can impact whether that the lifespan of that trunk line, if it's clean, jetted, we just don't know. We feel it's very appropriate that Fund 20 monies are utilized for out of Fund 20. So,
okay.
And I'll defer to legal. We did have legal take a look at their memo that they wrote a year ago to provide the board with advice. And
Mr. Trillo.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Huebner asked General Counsel Wendy Stockton to look into this issue in May 2016. She concluded that it's reasonable interpretation of the board to use Fund 20 for items, and that those items can be interpreted as expansion. And I can read you a section out of her memo, which states that the memo concludes Fund 20 contains what are capacity charges, which, pertinent to this budget discussion, constitute a sinking fund for plant expansion and sewer line enlargement for existing or new public facilities, which proportionally benefit the property charged. The board can reasonably conclude that implementing the redundancy project is an example of plant expansion in every item that constitutes the redundancy project.
Great. Thank you. So,
can I follow up on that?
Sure.
I agree with you that the redundancy project and cogen are things that were not contemplated in the original plant design, and therefore arguably would meet the expansion and capital expansion concept of Fund 20. Where I fail to see that nexus is with cleaning the trunk system, which is a periodic maintenance effort that I don't see how that I just don't see how that relates to expansion in any way, shape, or form. So I would hope that that could be realigned. I also recall back in the day that there was some either resolution or ordinance of the board that established some parameters for Fund 20. And I would hope that we would be respectful of prior board actions, not that they wouldn't be looked at perhaps in terms of changing circumstances for the district or other considerations, maybe something we wanted to bring back and consider revision there too. But hopefully we would consider our history to this point in advising what our proper course is with Fund 20.
Okay, great. Two additional questions for me. And, you know, basically none of us are happy with respect to these legal bills and these fees. And I think there was a speaker who said anytime there is an employee who, or someone who makes an allegation or there is something raised, we do have to investigate it now. So I want to make sure that people understand that none of us are happy about having to deal with these legal bills and these issues. There are HR issues that we can't talk a whole lot about. I do want to ask the question under the attorney fee, the $96,000. Does that align with the contract, the current contract that we have with Mr. Trujillo and Ms. Stockton?
So they don't have a not to exceed amount. The $96,000 is essentially the same value that we utilized in last year's budget. Again, placeholder, best professional judgment, absent any other information, that's what we had in last year's budget. I just carried over the value.
Okay. And then, Jim, I agree with you on this outside legal, outside counsel litigation, that number, $50,000, and we can have that discussion when we bring it back out to the public. I think that was all I had for now. Okay. So let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone from the community that would like to make a comment on the item before the board.
I'm number one.
Julie Tacker, and I didn't see a line item for Julie Tacker's public records requests, and certainly didn't exceed $200,000. But I was a little confused about the explanation of the Bay Foundation check, that it wasn't cashed and it's being brought into this year's budget. Why isn't it just being cashed and expended into last year's budget? Just a question. Something Mr. Huebner just said about new development directly affects your trunk lines, not that I know of. You have water retrofit programs, certainly in the two cities, and new development is offsetting its use, and either it's a one-to-one value or a two-to-one value. There is not new water coming down those pipes. And in fact, when the pipe broke coming from Oceano, you sleeved it and made it even smaller. So I disagree with that characterization about new development and how it affects your trunk lines. Your trunk lines are 9 miles. What are we talking, $20,000 to jet those, camera those? That doesn't make sense. The real $70,000 that includes I&I study, that's where the money is. The I&I study is going to be expensive. I have a question. The Wallace Group did an I&I study in 2010. Can that just be updated? It identified most the I&I coming from Oceano. How much work has been done to the sewers in Oceano in those 7 years to reduce that I&I? And, you know, maybe that's the same problem still today. One of your exhibits is the public notice for this agenda, for this public hearing. I saw the public notice in the Tribune, and it was on Friday. That was just 5 days ago. I do think there's a legal requirement to have a two-week notice, but there's lawyers in the room that can talk about that. I think it would have been helpful, and I mentioned this 2 weeks ago, I think Mr. Hill also said it, but it would be helpful to have the 2016-17 budget column next to what you're doing this year so that you can see that the legal number was $96,000 last year, and it is again this year. That's what you need to see so you're not having to ask those questions. Also, what would be helpful is an organizational chart. When we have this staffing, you see the little tiers, the little boxes, and who's there, who's all in those would also be helpful. With regard to Fund 20, I think the goal is that you leave as much money there as you can. The rate study characterized Fund 20 as an expansion fund, and that that would be where your redundancy funds would be housed. So you didn't spend very much on redundancy last year, and so there should be a lot of money left over from that.
Julie,
those are my notes.
That's your time. Thank you. Anyone else?
Chris Victorine, Oceano. And it was stated earlier that the district goes on a cash basis of accounting. In the both the 2013-14 and 14-15 audited financial statements say that the district follows the accrual method of accounting. And the profit and loss and the profit and loss and budget and actual report for July 16 through March of 2017 also notes an accrual basis. I'd like clarification on which accounting method the district uses.
Anyone else?
I had one question on the revenues for school services. I noticed that it decreased like $30,000, and I was wondering
why. Can I get your name?
My name's Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
I know it's based on average daily attendance, and I was wondering why it dropped so significantly.
Anyone else?
Mary Lucy, I'd actually like the chair to clarify if Ms. Simpson was speaking as an employee or as a ratepayer regarding employee benefits. I'm not gonna sit here and reformat your agenda. It does help. It is helpful though to have a comparison, but we do have quarterly financials that provide that. I wanted to ask the gentleman here. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last name.
Jones.
Jones, okay. Okay, so Mr. Jones, after we do the
Chair, with due respect.
Yeah, Mary.
Oh,
thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah, and I.
Okay,
and
so will there be a reduction in after the clarifier is fixed through this budget, right? Will there be a reduction in chemicals at all? Will there be any cost savings to, you know, fixing that clarifier and actually clarifying, cleaning the water a little bit better, I'm hoping. So that would be one thing. And then I saw that you were, I would like to see more in maintaining the plant. There was only a small, minimal amount there. And as far as jetting out the systems, I think it came to $100,000. Usually, don't they really jet water systems versus sewer systems and do cameras down those? And will that be done before the clarifier is up and going or after? And will there be a fiscal change in that line item as well? Thanks.
Great. Anyone else?
I'm Debbie Peterson, and I pay rates through my business and through my residence in Grover Beach. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Fund 20, because historically it's been the subject of several audits and grand jury reports. And I'd like to suggest that the board take a look at the resolution, which states how it's meant to be used, and if it's time for a change, that the board bring that and make those changes. However, at this point in time, I think that it would be risky to follow this advice that you believe that the board has discretion to also pay certain charges from this fund. And I'm supportive of the suggestion that it's actually not truck sewer video logging or truck sewer inflow and infiltration. That's a typo. It's trunk, I believe. But that those sums are actually for routine repair and maintenance. And what I'd like to do is just read you some of the board comments from the past, or some of the auditor comments from the past. So there was a finding in the 2011 audit. It was finding number 3 on connection fees, and it was considered a material weakness and significant deficiency that revenue received for connection fees should be restricted to capital expansion project purposes only. And they noted that connection fees were used for general operations and that they are restricted for capital expansion project purposes only. The cause? District oversight, or lack thereof. And so the effect is that cash was restricted for capital project use. And the recommendation of the auditors was the district should not use funds restricted for capital expansion projects on general plant operations. The district should set up due to, due from accounts between funds, and it goes on with some other suggestions. And then in 2012, the summary, note 2, summary of significant accounting policies, which comes from the county audit, which came out of the grand jury report, and the county is the ultimate auditor for the district, and your funds do, of course, have to be approved by the Board of Supervisors. Item J, restricted assets are financial resources segregated for a special purpose, such as construction of improvements and financing of debt obligations. These assets are for the benefit of a distinct group and, as such, are legally or contractually restricted. And, of course, we do function under rule of law in this county, in this country, in our form of government, and I think it's critical that those who are making the laws follow those laws, especially the laws that they themselves or their board has created. So I'd ask you to, perhaps if you have questions on any of those things, defer to the auditors, defer to the county. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
All right.
Patricia Price,
I have a chart here before me. It's for fiscal year 16-17. It's a resolution that was adopted March 3rd. The number at the bottom of it was full-time employees classifications. It says there are 10 employees. And this year, the 2017-18, it says there are 11 employees. So it isn't the same as it was a year ago. and talking about the deferred maintenance, when I spoke to Mr. Huebner, one of the things he said to me, he mentioned, because we were talking about the deferred maintenance, and he said that John deferred the maintenance to make the numbers look better, and there were a lot of different ways of looking at how things were going. So I'm wondering, you know, why Mr. Huebner feels that it's okay to defer maintenance now. And I agree. I agree with deferred maintenance if there's a reason for it and there's money better spent somewhere else. But now I'm wondering if it's okay now, why isn't that being done on the sewer lines as Mr. Hill suggested? That's all I've got.
Is there anyone else? Dr. Arnoldson, Grover Beach. Sitting back there, I kind of noticed some of the things that are happening within the group up here, and I see that sometimes when Mr. Hill either pulls something from the consent agenda or talks about something as such as what we're talking about in the budget, a little bit of bristle, a little bit of feathers going up and stuff. And it would seem to me that if Mr. Hill had more communication with the district administrator prior to the meetings, there wouldn't be so much bristling, so much embarrassment. I want to say that I think what Patricia said a while ago about some very good correlations between what's happening now and what happened with the Wallace administration, I think I can see some of that, and I think part of the reason that that happened with the Wallace administration was that there were board members that weren't quite as adept at looking at budgets items and adept at knowing what this whole system, how it works. I want to commend Mr. Hill as his ability to look into the system. I mean, when I'm talking about the sanitation district itself, he knows the system. He knows how it works. He's an engineer, and I really appreciate his input. I appreciate the fact that he goes through that agenda word by word. I know that I wouldn't be able to do that on the board because I wouldn't be as competent because I'm not an engineer, but I do appreciate it, and I think that as other board members, you should commend him for that and even look into some of the suggestions that he makes. I was going to say something else, but anyway, he's a steward of our money and of our district, and I really commend him on that. So that's all, about as much as I have to say on that. Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the board. So let me see here. There was a question regarding the Wallace I&I study. I don't know. We probably don't have an answer to that tonight. Do you have anything on that, Garrett?
Certainly, we have that as a foundation, and that will be was looked at by MKN, who put together the proposal to look at our I&I. So we're building upon that. We're certainly not ignoring that.
Okay. And Mr. Trujillo, there was a question raised regarding the public notice. Can you respond? Can you address that, please?
Certainly. I don't believe that we were asked to review that notice prior to being published, so I haven't looked at it or the exact period for the notice. I don't have that citation for you, but I can say that in general, we try to do our best to comply with the notice requirements. notice requirements for a document like this is much different than for a CEQA document or for a 218 process. So I think that the notice is satisfactory for tonight, and I can certainly research and find that citation for you.
So, Gil, if I could add, I did have Wendy look at that. She hadn't probably had a chance to brief you. She found and researched that there is actually no specific requirement to publish any notice for special districts. Counties have their own requirements in terms of hearings and such forth. We embarked on a practice many years ago, probably a very good practice, and we've continued that practice, but there's no requirement to do the two-week and every two, twice within 2 weeks, like a 218 vote and so forth.
Okay.
So we believe we have gone above and beyond in terms of public noticing by doing our publishing in the Tribune.
Okay. I think Ms. Victorine asked a question regarding cash basis versus accrual method.
So my two clarifications. I probably should just say we operate essentially with cash in the sense that we don't have any other assets other than, of course, our plant. And that's not something that, in terms of this budget, that we talk about. She's correct that we do the accrual method. I will say that our bookkeeper has looked at that and found that that is not actually the correct method to do. But yes, our auditors have looked at that and commented on that. The fact that we do it that way doesn't necessarily mean that's the correct way. And at some point, we may come back to you with a different recommendation on how we report.
Okay. There was a question regarding the timing of the water system. Would that be done before the clarifier, Mr. Jones?
I needed a little bit of clarification. We're deferring the clarifier, so I'm not sure. I understand the question. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I think the maintenance on it will, it won't necessarily, it's an arm that needs repair. There's some mechanical to make it operate better and more efficient. It may or may not have anything to do with reduction in chemicals.
Doesn't have anything to do with chemical. I apologize. Yeah,
great. Thanks for that clarification. Okay.
I can answer. There was one other question about the school services. I think I can answer that pretty quickly. Looking at our third quarter, we only got 11% in terms of revenue. So projecting, I went on a low amount. Again, the connection fees are very hard to make a forecast, and then school services, we're just not getting that revenue. So I went on the conservative side and said we're not likely to get any. Of course, if we get them, that's, of course, to our benefit or to our plus in terms of our cash.
Okay. And then clarify, there's a pun. So the deferral on the clarifier, you're talking about to the next fiscal year. We're not talking 2 years, 3 years.
No.
Just clarify that for folks?
We're just deferring it for one fiscal year. However, if it comes in dire need, we'll be before you before that and certainly request funding to do any repairs or any maintenance we have to do. So.
So one fiscal year versus one calendar year. You want to make a...
Yes. I mean, we'd be a year from now, be here, and it would be in the budget for next year.
Okay. All right. And I would also say that I'm sure folks have gone to hundreds of these meetings. You know, we don't go to very many. But with budgets, it's a projected budget. It's a recommended budget. And if the board majority chooses to make modifications as suggested by board members here, then this is the opportunity time for us to do that. I will also say, and I'm not going to be combative, it's just going to make this statement that I've been on the Grover Beach City Council for many years, and I have a Bachelor of Science in City and Regional Planning. I have a expertise in getting permits, but my job when I sit at this dais with the City of Grove Beach as mayor, when I sit up here, we have experts. So that's why I'm referring to them. I'm trying to get clarifications for you from the experts, and that's what our job is. So with that, Let's see where we are with the budget. Linda, you have anything?
I think every question I have has been answered, everything that you asked. On the 6A, Jim brought up the administration of the compensation plan. If we to approve this, this will be changed, right, to say the complete board of directors and not the chair?
I would say,
yeah. Put in, and that and change the district manager to the administrator?
That's all that we should do. That's part of a motion, and I would say I agree with that statement that it should be the board, not the entire board, not the chair. And I agree with that. So I think any motion that comes forward should include any amendments or modifications.
And then the check that wasn't cashed, is that will that come back to be cashed? Will they be wanting the payment again? Or
yes. So we will be inquiring where the board would like us to reissue a check. It will come on a future warrant register for your approval. And after that approval, there will be a new check issued to whatever entity the board tells us.
So it's just not to that entity. It will be another entity that they'll...
It could be the Bay Foundation. It could be some whoever they designate. I certainly won't bring it on the warrant register until I have confirmation on who that would be. It's unfortunate we have to do this and we have to include it, but... procedurally, this is the only way that I could see that we had to do this properly.
Okay.
Okay. Someone want to try a motion?
I have one concern I want to. Again, I see the recommendations on this item. It's recommendations, hold a public meeting, and I've never seen that language before. It's always hold a public hearing. And hold a public hearing generally comes with a notification requirement. And what I don't want to do is approve something tonight and then have to unwind it and come back and rehold a public hearing because we didn't give sufficient notice and get balled up with all of that. How long would it take to get a definitive answer to the notification requirement, if any?
Right now, I believe. I was provided a copy of the statute from a member of the public. It does say the board of directors shall publish the notice at least 2 weeks before the hearing in at least one newspaper of general circulation. The only thing I'm not certain of is whether or not the reference to the Health and Safety Code 40130 to 40131, which incorporates the government code's notice provision in 61,000, whether or not those are accurate. I'd have to look at to see if it applies. But based on a cursory look at this government code, it does say 2 weeks before district adoption. The one question I would have is, did we publish notice of this for the last budget hearing?
No. Okay. Other than our regular agenda notice, website, our typical noticing of this meeting, we did not put it in front of the newspaper. Again, anticipating this, I did ask an opinion for Wendy, and she did look at that, and she says there, in her opinion, she could find no government code reference that was applicable. And again, this isn't an adoption of a wastewater rate 218 protest hearing. For example, we will be publishing for an upcoming billing agenda item in July for the property tax, and that will have two noticing, but that's a separate issue entirely.
Why don't we do this? Let's take a 5-minute break. Let's let Mr. Trujillo look at that, and if he needs to get Ms. Stockton on the horn, we can get this resolved tonight. So we're going to take let's make it 6 minutes. So let's reconvene at 7:55.
too director. I mean, stuff happens. Yeah. It's, you know,
I'm going to reconvene the regular meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and I think legal counsel is making his way back over. And would you provide some clarification on the notification?
Yes, Chair. Thank you for the break. Wendy Stockton was able to research that issue. She determined that the reference to the Health and Safety Code applies to county air pollution control districts only. So I believe that we are safe to proceed tonight under the current notice.
Very good. Thank you, sir. And thank Wendy for us. Okay. We're at a point where would someone like to try a motion on this item?
Okay, let me see if I can take a stab at that. I would move that we approve a budget for fiscal year 2017-18. Such that generally as presented by staff with the following changes, that the phase one and phase two trunk sewer video logging, jetting, cleaning, and INI study not be funded through fund 20, rather be funded through fund 19 and or 26. That those funds set collected for redundancy under our recent rate increase be identified as a separate account, which could be incorporated into Fund 20. That the professional services for attorney fee be reduced to $36,000 from $96,000, and that the professional services outside counsel litigation be reduced from $50,000 to $20,000, absent additional board action. That the transfers from Fund 19 to Fund 26 reflect the updated total 777,200 instead of the $1 million that was on an earlier copy that I had. That on item 6A, attachment 2, page 9, the total revenues to Fund 20 be corrected to $153,000, such that the total at the end of the year is $3.203 million. That shows currently as total revenue. Thank you. that we acknowledge the deferral of the work on the primary clarifier and that the charges for laboratory capital equipment, which 207-B2-13 laboratory calibrations, be transferred to a maintenance fund. That under attachment number 5, page 1, administration of the compensation plan, in the third sentence, the term district manager be changed to administrator, and in the subsequent sentence, the chair of the board of directors shall make a decision, be changed to the board of directors shall make a decision. And that the adopting resolutions be modified as necessary to comply. That's my motion.
Okay. So would you be open to a friendly amendment? I'm in agreement with you on reducing the outside counsel litigation to 20. But the attorney's fee, which I believe is actually more in line for Mr. Trujillo and Ms. Stockton, that maybe not $96,000, maybe it'd be $70,000 or $72,000.
Well, $96,000 is $8,000 a month, which perhaps half of that, maybe $4,000 a month.
Okay.
$8,000 a month looking at...
I agree not the 96. So you're open to...
I would be open to an amendment to half that.
Okay. Then I will second your motion. I'm in agreement with all the others. So there's a motion, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion...
I do have to have a clarification on one specific item. Director Hill, you mentioned putting money in redundancy that reflects the rate increase. I'm not sure how I would implement that or even determine what value to put to that.
For
so maybe a little bit of clarification.
For additional discussion, yes. I would suggest establishing an account in Fund 20 for a redundancy project, and those portions of the increased fees collected from the rate increase due to the redundancy project be accounted there.
So just for clarification, right now the rates that we collect, there's no specific designation what's for redundancy versus new capital. So just to, if I could just throw this chart up here again, it'd be challenging for me to know what dollar to comply with you. Certainly, we'd want to do that. Would you be taking the entire rate increase and applying it to redundancy, or what proportion or percentage?
I would think that we should look at the documentation and the justification that we provided at the time we ran the 218 and justified the rate increases we were required to do, and look at any proportions that may have been indicated at that time such that we comply, and if it's not easily determined, then to come to a reasonable conclusion that can be brought back to the board to do that. What I would hope not to see in the interest of the public monies is that the rate increase devolves into an unaccounted general fund that when the clear claim was made for the rate increase that the money was largely necessary for the redundancy project, and I think we'll have plenty to spend on the redundancy project, so I don't think that should be too challenging to do.
So I would just, it's just an accounting. It's a way it's going to be labeled. So maybe work with Mr. Nunley or whomever.
I just didn't want to get in this untenable position where I wanted to comply and figure out a proportion or a percentage.
I understand.
And so I just needed that clarification. Thank
Great.
You.
Okay. Roll call.
Director Hill.
Yes.
Director Austin.
Yes.
Chair Scholes.
Yes. Okay, let's move on to item 6B, which is award of contract for the Cherry Avenue Sewer Bridge Maintenance Project.
I'll ask that gentleman to help me again, if he could. Again, as I set up here, shift gears. Okay, thank you. All right, this is item 6B. This is a proposal for a request to award of contract for the Cherry Avenue Sewer Pipe Bridge Maintenance Project. For background, as you know, or you may be aware, for several years, the district has pursued maintenance on the Cherry Avenue Sewer Pipe Bridge, which spans Aurora Grande Creek between Branch Street to the north and Nelson Street cul-de-sac to the south in the city of Aurora Grande. A little bit of the project description. The project is to remove existing paint and debris from the bridge. It's an application of anti-corrosion corroding systems onto the bridge structure. It's to utilize a containment system for the purpose of containing all the material and debris from the existing pipe bridge and support structure for proper disposal at a licensed facility. The containment structure will contain all water, resulting debris, and visible dust produced when the existing coating system is disturbed. Furthermore, there's proposed no fill in or any permanent disturbance to the Aurora Grande Creek channel bottom will occur. Native vegetation will be selectively pruned to provide access to the structure. No vegetation removal is proposed. Minor soil disturbance. All equipment is proposed to be staged within a 25-foot wide access easement at the top of the north bank of the creek. There'll be scaffolding hung from the bridge to allow the installation of the containment system. Be removal of invasive non-native plants occur within the easement under direction of a qualified biologist. All disturbed areas would be stabilized and revegetated with a semblance of native plants. As I've reported at several meetings through my district administrative report, several permits from the state of California was needed for us to initiate this maintenance project. Stream bed alteration agreement, or SAA, from California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and what they call a 401 certification from the regional board. In a sense, they've created a general permit. Those are the two permits that were needed. In order for the SAA stream bed alteration agreement to be issued, we also had to complete CEQA. Back in September of last year, the board approved a resolution, 2016-356, and a mitigated negative deck for the project, including a mitigation monitoring program, which would be necessary to implement, monitor, and enforce the project conditions. Subsequently, district staff filed the required notice of determination for the MMD with the county. November 30th, we received the regional board's notice of applicability, their general permit. March 7th of this year, California Department of Fish and Wildlife issued their permit. With the permitting complete, we then proceeded to the final design, specifications, and bid package. Moving on to bidding, on April 25th, a notice to bidders for the project was released. We had an initial deadline of May 22nd. We extended it to May 25th to allow questions from prospective bidders to be answered. In a sense, our engineering firm suggested that to allow that, perhaps to have one or more competitive bids. We did receive one bid on May 25th in the amount of $318,200. Unfortunately, that was considerably higher than the engineer's estimate for the project, which ranged from $149,000 to $249,000, and more than the $209,000 that we had estimated and contained in the adopted budget for this fiscal year. So I engaged in discussions with our engineering consulting firm, Gehring Taylor & Associate. They did produce a memo for me, and they recommended we enter into negotiations with Borough Construction to determine what could be eliminated from the project and still meet the project objectives, and then certainly why certain cost components or certain elements cost more than the engineer's estimate. They also said you could rebid the project, or you could do one or two of the above. I authorized them to go with number three. It seemed to me prudent to at least see how much we could reduce the cost estimate and if there are elements before immediately going to a rebid. A rebid also involves more time. Thereafter, Gehring Taylor did engage with the bidder and informed us that they were successful in reducing the price from $318,200 to $280,200 and recommended awarding. What we've seen out in the environment, and this is not unique, I had a discussion with Public Works San Luis Obispo on another project, is the construction bidding environment is very competitive and many projects are coming in overbid. The contractor proposes some project modifications through deletion of a few work items. We've included the reduced proposal and what they plan to do, which include vegetation removal, contract management, non-asbestos removal, and restoration of existing fence. Upon both review, both by myself and Gehring Taylor, we agree the deleted items do not affect the overall project objectives. Options for the board today are you can award the bid at the reduced price and scope. You could direct us to try and rescope the project, or you could rebid the project and reject the bid and rebid the project. In conclusion, we recommend option one, awarding the project to Borough Construction. As I mentioned before, we don't believe the rebidding of this project at this time will result in a more competitive or lower price. As I mentioned, we only had one bidder. This is a fairly unique project. And there may not be a lot of construction firms that are either willing or able to do the work. In addition, you have a time frame for completing the project prior to the fish and wildlife permit expiration expiring, although we could request an extension. And although the price is above the current budget amount or the budget amount in this fiscal year and the engineering estimate, the contractors agreed to paint the entire structure versus just the repair areas, thus providing at least one additional benefit to the project and perhaps prolonging future maintenance on the structure. So with that, our recommendation today is award the contract for installation and construction of the Cherry Avenue Sewer Bridge Maintenance Project to Borough Construction, Inc., and direct the district administrator to enter an agreement with Borough Construction in the amount of $280,200. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that, staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Lynn, do you have any questions? Jim?
Just a comment that the I don't believe Fish and Wildlife issued a permit. I think we defaulted into a condition where we can perform the work within a finite period of time because they failed to meet the time limit to issue such a permit.
They issued what's called an operation op law, letter of op law. Although we still have to abide by the conditions that we propose in our application.
Yes. And I'd just like to comment that good work by Gehring Taylor, our engineering consultant on this, and the willingness with Bruff Construction to work with us to try to get something that's a little more economical and still meets the needs of the district. So I'd be interested to hear public comment going forward.
Very good. I don't have any questions at this time, so let me open this up to the public and see who's got wants to comment.
Julie Tacker, and I wonder if I could see the slide
Mr. Huebner, where you have the items removed from the scope of work? The items that the contractor proposes, modification of deletion, vegetation removal, contract management, non-asbestos removal, restoration of existing fence. Are those things no longer applicable to the project, or who's going to do them? Because I guess I don't understand that. And then if they do need to be done, someone gets paid to do them. And I don't know that it's an in-house kind of thing. So that was my only question.
Very good. Anyone else?
I'm Patricia Price. I just have one comment on item number three. There was a couple of sentences, but part of one of the sentences said spray both sides with Roundup. And I was wondering if we could do that in that area, since they seem so sensitive, you know, fish and wildlife. So that was my only comment. The Roundup caught my eye.
Anyone else? Seeing no one coming forward, let me close it and bring it back to the board. And so, Gerhard, I think there were maybe just two questions, if you wanted to.
Well, certainly if you look, attachment number two, page one, there's a description, more detailed description that I provided in terms of I just summarized some of the things that they were proposing to delete. No, staff wouldn't be doing this. These would be things that were initially proposed, okay. But if you had to cut some things, they're not going to jeopardize the project objectives. For example, a wood fence is just, we're not going to be restoring it. So that's a $1,000 item that could be deducted and was.
Okay, and then the question on the Roundup.
We would default to, you know, fishing game in the application, and we would be having a qualified biologist out there. So the intent, of course, is not to utilize any herbicide beyond the scope of the project. And as I mentioned, it's going to be really limited. Certainly, they're not going to be using any of that. They're going to have a containment system. If they're going to do pruning, there's going to be, you know, pruning of some of the trees. I would imagine if there's any use of Roundup, it's going to be extremely limited. And I maybe missed.
No, I think that was good.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just don't.
So I didn't just basically to confirm, I mean, folks who don't have a copy of the staff report, folks who are at home, there are three options. Well, there's you identify alternatives for this board to consider, mm-hmm. either awarding the bid at the reduced price and scope, or we can rescope this project, or we can reject this bid and rebid it with all elements in there. So the board has the discretion mm-hmm. in how we move forward, correct?
Correct.
All right. So someone want to...
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
On the items that are deducted, are these things that, like an inspector or somebody, will come back and say that they should have been done? Or are these things that are just extras that we don't have to do to have the project be?
These are, I would say, extras or a little bit of bonus. I mean, you know, the biggest one here is the asbestos, so they don't plan to do asbestos. They will not disturb any. And so that could have been a big cost feature if they had disturbed it, had to dispose of it, had deal with
right.
it in some manner. So we were pretty careful to look at these, and these look like relatively minor deductions, and we still get a really good project, and we're
okay.
able to move forward.
Right.
Versus you go out to bid again, and
right.
again you could come up with even a higher price, or nobody bids.
Yeah.
That's the risk.
Okay.
Well, we ready to...
Yeah, you ready?
Oh, I'll make a motion that we approve to have our administrator award the contract for the Cherry Avenue Sewer Bridge to Brough Construction. How do you pronounce it?
Brough?
Brough Construction. Brough.
Okay, and then
the amount of $280,200.
Okay, so that basically staff's recommendation, correct?
Follow staff's recommendation.
Yes. Okay, then I'm going to second that. Jim, do you have any comments on the motion?
I support the motion. I would just note that the originally proposed vegetation removal, if I read correctly, was like 25 feet or something, and they've realized that they can do the work with like a 5 foot, so it'd be less vegetation removal, and then there's some non-native species in there. I share the commenter's concern about Roundup, and I think, Mr. Chair, you indicated that as well, so if somehow in the motion we could possibly have GTA or someone, you know, check just to make sure that we don't use inappropriate material there. And if Roundup is acceptable, then fine. But if there's some issue with that, then we want to make sure that we don't stumble into some noncompliance.
Agree with that. The make for the motion okay with that?
Yes, I'm fine.
Second is okay with that. And I did want to commend staff for bringing this forward. The bidding environment really has changed on us. We're seeing this throughout other projects and other organizations we're associated with. So this is a really good project. It was a really good solution that staff, and I mean all staff, came up with. So
we were thrilled to bring this forward. I actually kept this up until we were waiting really till deadline and pushing them to get this put together, because we did want to put this on the agenda and move forward.
And there's a limited time to completion as well. So
very good.
Yeah, good job to get it moving.
Let's go roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Chair Schultz?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. Board member communications. Linda, did you have anything?
No.
Jim?
I do. The comment was made that there's a number of things that weren't on the agenda this evening. I know our strategic plan's been on hold for a while, but job descriptions for Operator 3, policy manual updates, the audit was mentioned. I noticed that if we are going forward in the financial markets, an up-to-date audit is going to be mandatory, so I would hope that moves forward and comes to the board directly. We've had a number of comments about Public Records Act, and it seems to me that there's potentially confusion there that could be cleared up by the board coming up with a policy directive on how we want to handle PRA requests. I think it's incumbent upon us to follow the spirit and the letter of the Public Records Act, and perhaps some statement from the board along those lines might be advantageous to all concerned. One day after our last meeting, I was copied on a letter from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which one of the prior commenters mentioned a letter from the board expressing concern of transparency, but this one was really one of the more remarkable letters I've seen, and it was copied to all the board members, and our council is familiar with it as well. I thought the letter so remarkable that I requested a special meeting to address it, and I thought that at the very least I would find it on the agenda this evening for discussion, and I don't see it. So this is directed, the letter is addressed to Administrator Huebner. It says this letter is to follow up on a discussion you had with Thea Tryon and Katie DeSimone in our office on May 4th, 2017. You asked that we prioritize our investigation and take action regarding potential falsification of reported data required by the South County Sanitation District's NPDES permit. You mentioned that the alleged violations were caused by an employee at the district and that you were pursuing a personnel action against the employee, and we should therefore act quickly to avoid negative press coverage. That sentence slapped me in the face and caught my attention. Ms. Tryon explained that we have established priorities for enforcement cases in our regional office and that the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement, not the regional board, handles issues regarding system operators. The Office of Operator Certification may also investigate issues involving operators. In addition, our enforcement actions are separate and distinct from the district's internal personnel actions. Any investigation that we or the Office of Enforcement conducts will be an objective investigation of the district. There's another lightning rod sentence right there. As such, please do not discuss the district's internal personnel actions with Water Board staff or try to influence Water Board staff in this regard. We consider personnel actions to be confidential, and we do not prioritize or conduct our investigations in relation to the district's personnel actions. If you wish to discuss this further, please have your counsel contact David Boyers, Assistant Chief Counsel, Office of Enforcement, and a Sacramento phone number is given. This is from the Assistant Executive Officer with copy to the executive officer of the Water Board. I thought this, again, very remarkable. I contacted our district legal counsel immediately and requested that we have either a special meeting or an agenda, and neither of our counsel were able to get that. But again, this did come to my attention. It is very remarkable, and I think it is something that warrants board attention. Last item. I recently provided a letter to the other board members, the district's legal counsel and the administrator, asking the board cease and desist from holding closed sessions concerning matters that had not been noticed on the meeting agenda or announced before adjourning to closed session. The deadline for the board to respond with a commitment to stop doing so came and went yesterday. The purpose of the Brown Act was stated in its first provision, which reads, "The legislature finds and declares that public commissions, boards, and councils, and other public agencies in this state exist to aid in the conduct of the people's business. It is the intent of the law that their actions be taken openly and that their deliberations be conducted openly. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so that they may retain control over the instruments they have created. To prevent subterfuge, the Brown Act requires that at least 72 hours before a meeting, a brief general description of each item of business to be either transacted or discussed in a closed session be posted on the meeting agenda. It also requires that each item of business to be discussed in closed session be announced at the meeting prior to adjourning to closed session. This did not occur before or at the April 19th, 2017 meeting. There were three closed session items posted on that agenda and announced, and then a fourth matter was neither posted nor announced, was raised for discussion in closed session. When I learned it would be discussed, I recused myself from discussing or participating in discussion on that fourth matter and left the closed session. In my opinion, that last matter was proper for a public discussion, should not have been held in a closed session, and in any event, certainly could not have been discussed in closed session without being listed, described, and announced as a closed session item with one of the appropriate Brown Act identifying labels. Even though the technical safe harbor within which the board could have adopted an unconditional commitment to cease and desist holding closed sessions on matters that have not been agendized and announced, the Brown Act still permits this board to adopt by resolution or ordinance such an unconditional commitment. I therefore propose to move that at the next meeting, such a resolution or ordinance making an unconditional commitment in response to my cease and desist letter be put on the agenda for public discussion and vote. Doing so now provides the public assurance that our district operations and deliberations will be fully open and above board. So I am asking at this time that that be put on a next agenda.
Thanks for those comments, and we're going to go to legal counsel because I think we are dangerously on some slippery slopes here. So it looks like we got both legal counsel. That's the point of having an attorney. So, Mr. Trujillo.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. As I've stated before publicly, I'm not aware of any Brown Act violation. I've spoken to Director Hill and attempted to answer his questions directly, and I've informed the board through a confidential communication of all matters that the board needs to know. And I have nothing further to say.
Okay, very good. And then I'd like some maybe clarification on the Public Record Act request. I think we want to restate again, this body has not... We've talked about this. Can you address compliance with the Brown Act? Or, I'm sorry, the Public Record Act request. Yes.
Yes. When we were retained, one of the items was to train staff to handle Public Records Act requests, and we have done that. And we come to the table assuming that every item is a public record, and only if an exemption exists do we then not produce it or produce a redacted copy. It is state law. Director Hill is correct that we should follow state law and the intent of state law, and there really is no opportunity not to follow it. I believe we are following it. Legal counsel, though, will only work on Public Records Act and charge for those costs if we're asked to by the board or by the district administrator.
Okay. I do have one communication, and I know that she's no longer here. And the last meeting, I think, was probably the exception. Oh, I'm sorry. So, Jim, you had made a motion. I think in light of we have legal counsel who has basically said on the record that there was no violation of Brown Act, and so I'm not going to second that motion, Linda. Okay. So I do want to, I think maybe we, I don't know if we'll ever be in an unusual situation where we would be going past 11, but I heard a speaker say that the City of Aurora Grandy has a resolution. I know Grover Beach has one, so if this board is open to that, I don't have an issue with them. Perhaps we can place something on the agenda.
We need to put it on our bylaws.
I would endorse a change to that. That was a brutal meeting.
Yeah. I make it 10 o'clock. But
10 o'clock? Sounds good to me. Okay.
But, or we can vote to extend, say if you're almost done, and then you could, vote to extend.
So I think the direction to staff is to come back with a resolution similar to our two of the member agencies, and then we can make some final decisions on that. So we have one closed session item tonight. Legal counsel, do you want to cover that item?
The board will be holding a closed session pursuant to the anticipated and litigation exception in the Brown Act. And that concludes my announcement.
Okay. Is there any member of the community that would like to address closed session?
Debbie Peterson, City of Grover Beach, resident. And I believe you do have an issue with a point of order, and that is that from everything I'm reading here on California Special Sanitation Districts, you do have to post the budget before the 30th of May, and it was not. So not being your legal advisor, I can't tell you how to correct that, but I believe that it requires some additional research on the part of the board. And I also would like to make the comment that despite all the assurances we've had that our district administrator and board have a stellar relationship with the water board, the last two correspondences we have had with them, and the number of
issues that we've had and legal problems that we've had in the district over the course of the past year would indicate to me that we do not have a district administrator who is competent to look after the best interests of the district, and I would hope that the board would take this very seriously.
Anyone else? I remembered what I was going to say during the budget, and it follows from what Mary Lucy said. She said that there was a obvious point of conflict when it comes to litigation, and there was a common denominator. She pretty much indicated that she felt that that was the plant manager. I would disagree and say it's the district administrator that has caused these problems, because when the plant manager was in that position, there were no problems with the with personnel. And since the district administrator has come on board, we've had all kinds of problems with personnel, and the legal fees have jumped. Anyone else?
Julie Tacker, and the item that's before you in closed session is the significant exposure to litigation. It doesn't say what it is. That's why it really could be anything. And I was just jotting down some things that I thought it might be. And would ask that if any claims have been made, I believe claims are public. So if there's been any claims made against the district, I would ask that those be made available to the public. But some of the things that you may be exposed for is the water board letter, the person who is mentioned by Mr. Huebner to the staff at the water board, whose dirty laundry was aired up there, may have a case against the district. The conversation that Mr. Huebner had with Patricia Price regarding the relationship between Mr. Clemens and Ms. Simpson may have you exposed. The outstanding grievances, I've lost count how many of those there are. The chlorine spill may be one. The alleged Brown Act violations, sounds like Mr. Hill and we know Kevin Reist filed a letter. The Downey brand is back. Is that because somebody got their ego bruised when they were suggested that they weren't transparent with the water board on the fine? And that, I think you're maybe exposing yourself. Actually, what I find interesting about that correspondence, when Mr. Huebner spoke about it, he said that the budget that had the grit removal in it was publicly noticed, and the water board should have known. Well, this budget wasn't publicly noticed, but for 5 days ago. You can figure that out. And I do believe, with regard, maybe your legal counsel doesn't know that you're exposed with regard to the Public Record Act, because he just said he's only engaged when the district administrator sends him something. Maybe the district administrator's not sending him things, and that the district administrator's practice has you exposed. The fact that I have outstanding public records requests that have not been responded to by either legal counsel, he's just jerking me around by waiting longer than 10 days or making me clarify something, exposes you for misuse of the Public Record Act. So, again, I would like any claims that are available to the public to be made available, and then have a wonderful time in there. Pick from this smorgasbord.
Thank you for those comments. All right, let me close it to the public. We are going to recess in a closed session.